Okay, do the deed. All right.
Close your eyes.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think
some sort of double blind.
We'll do this for a pair of loopology discs.
Okay. David Wood.
Okay.
Excellent.
These are courtesy of Charles at Adobe. The format is not, it's an odd file extension, but Charles says they're MP3s.
It won't play on anything at all.
That's why it's free.
No, it'll play on a Martian iPod.
Yeah, there you go.
Cool. Okay.
Another pair.
Gary Gesselschen? Gesselschen?
Right there.
Wow. Hey.
What was that? That noise? The vibration peak thing you had there that this mic worked with?
Can I borrow one of your pants?
Let's see. How about, should we do the thermometer? Non-contact thermometer.
Ooh, hot.
Just what you need for politicians.
Hot, yeah. It's cool. Christopher Deckard.
Huh?
Christopher.
He just left.
Ha!
Just left.
You must be present to win.
You have to be present to win. Yeah. All right. Okay. Bill Levy.
Right here.
All right.
Congratulations.
This is courtesy of our friends at Fluke.
Oh, so you point at me?
Yeah. It's a point and shoot thermometer.
If it works, it's a fluke. That's what I said.
That's what Beckman tried to say.
That's not the full thermometer.
Wonder Pictures.
Well, shall I just reach in?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, shall we do one of the Opus 4 CDs?
Oh, yes. But they're not CDs. Well, one is. Excuse me. One is. Yeah. That's not
them. Okay, this is a DVD.
DVD-A.
Mijo and Diego. Rumba and...
It's actually got two things on it.
Okay.
There are three piano pieces. They're performed by Regina Yee. And then there are four, world music pieces by the group. It's actually called Canarimba, but that's Mijo and Diego. Yeah. And friends. Okay, John Mendenhall.
Hey,
John. John.
He's gone. The Belden guy left.
Take
the other Belden guy.
Snuck out.
Ah.
I told him. Should have stuck around.
That's a good guess.
I put a note on one of those. I don't know if that's it. But the first three pieces are at one level. I didn't actually, quote, master it, in one sense. Because it's kind of, so watch out for the last four, whoever gets it.
Caution, diesel louder.
Yes. Did I put caution on it? Oh, I did. Oh, good for me.
Right. Plus 50.
Michael Medallion? Medallion?
Huh? I think that was one of the crowd.
What do you think?
Gibberish to me.
Michael, it looks like, Medallina? No, Medallion.
Medallion? That's it.
Good enough.
He must not be here.
Wherever it is, it's not here.
Okay.
I'll try again.
Okay. Jamie Singer.
Hey, yes. Hey.
There we go.
Congratulations.
He's back.
Just the last four.
Oh, my.
He's going to throw the book at you.
Oh.
You won a prize, but you weren't here.
I did not want
to try.
Okay, this is Jensina.
Oh, okay. Oh, who teaches here at Shoreline Community College, by the way? Gary Beebe.
Get both BSW guys. So. You're taken care of.
Yeah.
That's a bribe.
You get the order tomorrow?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, this is another one of the DVDs.
Okay. Mark Edman.
Oh, good.
All right. My goodness.
Cool. Finally, somebody in the first row.
Yeah, and someone that can use it very much.
Yes, this will be fun.
Okay.
Let's see, this is an Adobe Isotope t-shirt. Size large.
I want it.
Aaron Gates. Front row.
And there's one more t-shirt.
I'll give you a ring.
Okay, here we go.
And here we have an audition t-shirt. Version
Rob,
2.
Rob Baum.
Front row.
Front row. Now we know where to sit.
That's it.
I'm enjoying calling these.
You can give away cookies.
Cookies, yes. All right. Well, so be it.
Can we give away wire?
I can send some wire. I'll send some wire anyway. All
right. Well, my day is done.
Then it's back to you, gentlemen.
Shall I start with a story, another story? This slide reminds me of a story. Way back in the dawn of time, we used to make teeny tiny wire. In fact, at one point we went down to 52 gauge. 52 gauge wire is so small that you cannot see it with the naked eye. You can barely feel it. But the whole point is, when you make wire, you take big wire, you stick it in the machine, and it pulls it through and makes smaller wire, you know? So you take like 40 or something, you put it in, and come out 52. One day, the woman who ran the 52-gauge wire extruder retired from the Belden factory, and the next day, they couldn't make 52-gauge wire. And so they called her back and said, look, you have to teach us how to make 52-gauge. Now, she'd been doing this for like 30, 40 years, right? This is when we get the factory. And she said, okay. She said, well, here's how you do it. You stick the 40 in there, okay? You hear that? Oh, you hear that? You hear that? Of course, nobody heard anything, right? She had been doing this so long, she knew exactly how to run this machine, you know? And you could see the thing turning at the other end. There must be wire on it, or it couldn't be turning, right? So obviously, she was making 52, but then they figured they couldn't make 52 because nobody could hear anything, didn't know what she was doing. And the interesting thing was, the reason we were making 52 gauge was to make transformers for satellites that had tubes. You follow this? This is how long ago this was. And this was just at the point where they were deciding they could actually make solid-state devices that would actually last in outer space, and so they wouldn't need any transformers, and so they didn't need 52-gauge wire, and so we don't make it. Although you can buy 52-gauge wire. It's all now made by computers, you can imagine, because no human being can actually do this, right? And they go down, you can go down to like 60 now, which is unbelievably tiny. I mean, that's, you know, microscopically tiny wire. Super expensive if you get stuff like this, because you imagine the machine to make this is, you know, pretty impressive. So that's my 52-gauge wire story.
What,
yes?
What gives bonding wire in ICs usually?
That gold wire can go down really, really tiny. You could probably go down almost as low as you want to go, depending on what the machine is that, you know, you can buy an extruder that'll go down to you tell me what number you want. You know, I guess when you get down to, you know, gauge 100, it's like, you know, 10 atoms wide or something, you know. So.
What's guitar pickup wire?
Oh, that's probably, it's not that small, really. You can
something?
See it.
Yeah.
So it's probably 40, maybe a little
41,
more than that.
43.
Yeah. Something I didn't even realize for a long time. And just one day kind of it dawned on me while looking at a table of these gauge sizes, and it's a handy thing to know if you are sizing something for a system. This is logarithmic. What these gauges represent is the diameter or the area, the cross-sectional area of the wire, and it's on a logarithmic scale. So there's exactly 10 times as much wire in a 30 gauge as in a 40. And 10 times more than that in a 20, and 10 times more in a 10, and so on. It makes it very easy if you're trying to work out resistance, you know, if you need to run something in parallel because you got to accommodate more current or what have you.
Or take your Cat 5 and turn it into a speaker cable.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you do that?
You can work out your combined gauge sizes very easily if you understand that it's all logarithmic.
And then
so
where does the 1 watt work into that?
That's giant. giant wire. And it goes beyond that. I mean, eventually you get end of aught, one slash zero is what that means. Eventually you get down to sizes that are so huge that they actually change to a different system called MCM. And like these are the conductors that go into buildings delivering power kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Huge, giant conductors.
Bridge wire.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally bridges.
Yeah. Well, no, that's not conductive. That's not carrying electricity. That's mechanical.
Structural.
But, yeah, so that's the thing. What's that?
Something circular mills. What is the first?
Circular mill area?
MCM is something circular mills.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to remember what.
See, I don't deal with stuff that big.
1,000 circular mills.
Okay.
1,000 circular mills?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the other thing. He was talking about how to combine wires. The easiest way that I know how to do it also is that you look in the Belden catalog or anybody's catalog, and we tell you the circular mill area, the CMA, of each wire gauge size. If you add up the CMAs together, you take 10 wires of different gauges, you squish them together, you simply add up all those numbers, all those circular mill areas, then look that on the chart and it'll tell you what the gauge size is of the resultant cable. And that's the easiest way to do that. And that's why you take all the 24s by the time you put them together, which is Cat 5 turning into a speaker cable, if all of this, which is ridiculously a waste of time, is almost exactly 10 gauge by the time you're done. So why don't you just go out and buy a 10 gauge wire, you know?
Does Belden make wire? Is the domain of Belden wire, is it for electrical applications, or do you
if it carries a signal?
If
it carries a signal, we probably make it. That means we don't make high tension power lines.
Or piano wire or anything.
Or piano wire, anything mechanical side. Or, yeah.
Or fiber optic.
Well, yeah, that carries a signal. We make that.
What about smoke signals?
Smoke signals. Smoke signal wire. Hey, now there's, I'll put that on my list of new products.
We do the low smoke halogen. Right?
I mean, yeah. Believe me, you can get the wire to smoke.
Or smoke and mirrors wire. Which
is the smoke and mirror wires, that's the other guy. Yeah. Right. Where do we want to go?
Oh, I don't know. Smoke and mirrors wire. I had some text that I was looking at online. A fella a couple of years ago wanted to sell us something, which I just thought was the coolest device ever. It was a quantum purifier, and he said we could add these to cables, and this would be a huge value added for our customers. And I went to their website today, and I as an ex-lawyer, I always admire well-written bullshit. I enjoyed this. I thought this was cute. Quantum purifiers operate on the quantum mechanical level to regulate the flow of electrons that make up the signal. Picture a metering light regulating freeway traffic flow. Current flow within the quantum purifier is unimpeded and ideal. Think of the unencumbered flow of traffic on a lightly traveled expressway. During transit through the quantum purifier, quantum noise energy is stripped off the electrons, streamlining their flow through ensuing conductors. Unwanted quantum noise energy dissipates as heat within the quantum purifier, rather than emerging as a layer of contamination residue over the audio-video information. The benefits of this process extend beyond the physical length of the quantum purifier. As electrons speed through the purifier, a slipstream effect is formed, which facilitates concurrent flow in the surrounding conductors of the playback system. Introducing quantum purification into the electron path reduces quantum noise and increases signal velocity, resulting in performance improvement beyond what is attainable by any cable alone, no matter how well designed. Now, I've looked at these things, actually. They're really cool. What they appear to be is ceramic resistors. I think they are, but you can imagine that although there's a good deal of this on the website, there's not a lot of technical data that would probably help you evaluate exactly what's in the little thing. They cost $30 a piece, though, so you could probably get a better deal on ceramic resistors than that.
Anybody who's brave enough
to buy
fluid
dynamics to a quantum resistor. You know they're not. There's some brilliant stuff.
It's always fun, the quantum mechanical thing, and you see this again. This is like another one of these paranormal things that extends outside of the domain of wire and cable into every kind of phenomenon. If someone wants to explain how ESP works, well, there's, you know, quantum entanglement, and so we know that things, spooky action at a distance can happen, so if I project a thought, you might be able to quantum entangle that thought and pick it up. You know, no notion of what quantum mechanics actually involves, but it's a handy explanation for anything that's ridiculous and...
That you weren't going to go
that
check.
That you didn't have, and you right. don't have a basis for claiming.
By the way, I found out what they actually do. They tell them to put it between the diode bridge and the filter capacitors. And what it is, it's one of these things that is sort of a current limiting thing. So as current goes up, its apparent resistance goes up. You know, it's the voltage is one of these.
Is that isn't that a Zener diode?
No, the opposite.
Like a polyfuse?
What?
A polyfuse?
Sort of like this. So the voltage goes up disproportionately to the current. What it does is it means that you don't get the big charging surges into the capacitor, so you don't throw crap back down the line.
Hmm.
So that's what it does.
Hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
I didn't say this was had anything to do with quantum mechanics.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's quantum spelled KW, right?
Yeah. No, it's a Volkswagen quantum. That you didn't tell you that part.
But it was interesting to note that seems to be what it is. You know, how you're supposed to put, in a lot of things, you're supposed to put a very small inductor in series with some of the, just to avoid the current spikes. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It turns it into heat instead of reacting.
I like the fact that it makes it go faster.
Well, that's
by the way, that's one of the things that people don't realize is that the speed on all these cables, there's only one place that light goes the speed of light, that's in a vacuum. And on a cable, it goes less than that based on the plastic that's around the cable, which is why there's a dielectric constant that's literally a speed for each cable, and I can tell you precisely what it is based on that plastic. You tell me the plastic, I'll tell you the speed. And in fact, I'm almost to that. Yeah, here we go. There's four very common plastics: polyvinyl chloride, PVC, polypropylene, polyethylene, and Teflon, and it shows you the speed as the percentage of the speed of light. And the thing is, we can make it even higher than that by adding air to it, and I can get up to 86%. In fact, this cable here, which I'll pass around, the largest coax we make. This is 86% velocity, and the cool thing about it is, what that means is, inside this is 2/3 air. There's nothing inside this cable. It's almost entirely air. We sell you air, you see, and the more air we put in, the more we charge you.
Yeah.
This is a great business, okay?
It's not hot air, though, is it?
It's not hot air. It's just cold air. It's actually nitrogen that's really that we put in. But the amazing thing is, you know, that this is mostly air. And so we can get up to these really high velocities, 86% the speed of light. Most people think that the only one that you could use that goes faster is fiber optics. In fact, that's worse. That's much worse than any copper cable. That's about 50% the speed of light. And you think about it. Think about light going through a window. And think about 100 windows in a row and then 1,000 windows.
Yeah.
You can't see anything down there, right? A laser beam might get through. Hey, that's what to use, right? But light has a real hard time getting through, so it's really slow compared to copper. Yes?
Which number cable is that?
That's called 7977A.
Oh.
That's a 50-ohm coax, by the way. Yes?
I think you're telling me the signal goes down the cable, goes down the wire, is a function of the plastic around it?
Absolutely. And the reason why this doesn't make sense until you think about this. When you put electricity down a wire, it produces a magnetic field around that wire. That's why we have crosstalk and all these effects outside of the cable. And so what's around the wire actually affects the speed of the signal. If you could put a vacuum there, it would go 100%. But if you put anything else, air is 99.7%. Plastic is less than that. Because that's where that field, and there are some physicists will tell you, in fact, there's no electron flow on the wire at all. It's all a magnetic field. That's the only thing that's actually happening.
It was the E field and the magnetic field with tiny degrees.
E field and H field.
And the pointing vector, the actual energy that transmits down the wire, doesn't go in the wire. It goes in the field around the wire.
Electrons don't move.
If you have an AC field, you think about the electrons aren't going to move at all. They're going to maybe, what they do is they vibrate back and forth a little bit.
Yeah.
And that vibration supports the changes in the E field, which of course creates the B field, which creates the E field. Whoops, there you go. You know, there you go off in the wave equation again.
And see, here's this thing we've used for a couple of hundred years that we still don't actually understand, you know. But there's still research going on how this actually works. How does this effect work?
Well, you know, the thing people talk about, electrons going through the wire, if you just figure out one mole of copper, which has 6 times 10 to the 23rd free conduction electrons.
6.023 times 10.
6.0, yeah. But the point is, call it 6 times 10 to the 23rd, that's a piece of, like, number 10 this long.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, in order to get an electron from one end of that wire to the other end of that, about 4 feet of wire, in, say, a second, you would have to move 6.02 times 10 to the 23 electrons one end to the other in a second, which is around 6,000 amps. Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with that.
You would have a nice arc. The point is, but that's what it would take to get the electrons to move at roughly a meter and a half per second. So the electrons in a wire do not move very much.
No.
I mean, the drift velocity of electrons is orders of magnitude smaller than the speed of light.
So the wacky vacuum cable is actually a fast cable.
It is a fast cable, absolutely.
Yeah.
Or
for all
that it matters.
Air
cover on little tripods would be the best ever.
So
right?
Vacuum.
Well, if air is pretty good. Air is very close to a vacuum, so that would be pretty good. If you can have an air-filled cable, which is why you look at the hard line for broadcasters and stuff, that's mostly air in there, and there's a reason why, because that is much faster, much higher velocity, better at high frequencies.
And then if you make the cable out of bismuth, which has a new zero, smaller than one, maybe you can even go a little faster.
And there's always a trick.
So should I be using bare speaker wire?
You could.
Just be really careful.
and the phase,
they're hard to bend.
The phase differential near the speed of light probably isn't something we need to worry about. Is it 50% of the speed of light, or is the speed of light? It's not going to slow it down.
Well, certainly when your wavelength is 2 miles long, I don't think the speed of light really has an effect anywhere.
Well, the other thing, a lot of plastics do have dispersion, but dispersion isn't going to matter. Dispersion means the speed of light changes at different frequencies.
Correct.
And dispersion only matters if you get a significant phase difference. And, you know, 20 kilohertz, no.
Nothing's happening.
Now, PVC at 0.8 megahertz is a different problem.
Yeah, this is why you don't find RF cables made with PVC, because it's crap, you know. So we make speaker cable with it instead.
Somewhere around 0.8 megahertz, and I forget, is the point at which the PVC molecule actually physically rotates. Yeah. Strangely enough, you tend to turn a lot of the energy into heat right at that frequency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't work very well.
The neat thing about this, about dielectric foams, is that they have 1,000 different names. Now, if you actually sell cable to people who know what it is, you tend to call it something nice and ordinary, like high-density polyethylene foam or something like that, like Belden does. But if you look at marketing literature in the consumer market, there's all this kind of, you know, space-age nitrogen gas-injected dielectric hoo-da-ha-da-hitty. And it's funny because all they're describing is foamed plastic. It's very much like all the mattress commercials where they have many different expressions for making foamed plastic sound like a very exciting and novel and useful and happy thing.
Yes.
And
memory foam.
Memory foam and all that. And, you know, the quality of the foam really does matter. And I have people calling me sometimes, you know, talking about Monster Cable and the things they'll say. And they'll make cracks about the space age microcellular nitrogen injected foam, and I say, you know, actually that's really good stuff. It's just that what you need to know is that all the other cables apart from theirs also have it, so you don't want to get too hung up on it. The other kind of neat thing about that from a cable design standpoint is that, you know, as you foam the dielectric for a given set of dimensions, your capacitance goes down. And if you're looking for a given characteristic impedance, like in a video cable or a SPDIF cable where you're out in 75 ohms, you're able to achieve that characteristic impedance at a lower capacitance than you are with a solid dielectric. And this is why, you know, if you look at old video cables like 8281, which used to be used to wire all the TV stations and things like that, you find the stuff is up around 21 picofarads per foot, and all the modern stuff now is about 16, 17. It's just because people have gone from solid to foam dielectrics.
Can I ask a question? I mean, we're talking about wire. What about magnet wire?
What about it?
You got varnish on it. What's that doing?
It's dielectric.
It's insulation.
It's so you don't short out the stuff when you wind it up.
I'm just wondering, is
that, that in fact is Belden's first invention that we ever patented was flexible enamel for putting on magnet wire. 1906.
You changed the formula?
Are you the one?
We have since then.
Is that your patent?
Yeah, mine personally? I was just a little kid then, so.
There's a fellow who markets speaker cables made out of magnet wire. The theory behind it, you know, a lot of these kind of audiophile things involve a certain amount of like equals like kind of reasoning. It's very, you know, it's sort of homeopathic logic or something like that. But he markets them under the name anti-cables. The idea being that anti, you know, as opposed to, you know, the idea being that a cable is going to act as some kind of gigantic filter in your audio, and by taking this extremely minimalist sort of wire that's just nothing but a thin coat of enamel over a solid core, that this will somehow give you sound which is more pure than you would get through some other arrangement. That, of course, is nonsense, but of course they work fine.
Isn't this Litz wire as well? That's...
Well, Litz, in my experience, when people say Litz wire, they're usually talking about a lot of insulated strands together. This guy, what he's doing is using big magnet wire. So you've only got one strand, you know, one strand plus and one strand minus. But yeah, if you were to do a bunch of strands of magnet wire like that, it'd be the same kind of phenomenon.
Because that reduces the inductance. If you want super low inductance, get Litz wire. Something we used to make, we don't make it anymore because there's just no call for it anymore. Most of the people who wanted to use it were in, like, in a lab environment where, for some reason, inductance was, like, a very critical thing. And that's thousands of little tiny conductors, each of which is insulated from each other, and that reduces the inductance. And the only way you can actually connect this stuff is you either heat the front of the wires to melt off the plastic inside, or sometimes you can dip it in some caustic material that will take off the thing, and then you can solder the whole thing as one conductor kind of thing. Lots of fun to work with, so it's probably one of the reasons we didn't sell any.
It's almost as bad as tinsel wire.
Yeah, oh, tinsel, like your telephone handset.
Have you any comment on the Purist Audio Concepts aqueous cables?
I know they exist, but...
They have a water dielectric.
Yeah, well, I think the dielectric constant of water is not terribly good.
Well, it's also not terribly constant, even at audio frequencies, but...
What happens if they leak?
You have a mess.
Yeah. What's that new wired phone?
I just thought I'd bring that one up.
Well, that's a good idea. You should have a little foam generator for the water.
I think it's your beer-filled cables.
Beer-filled cables? Well, you know, actually, the way they get the fine bubbles in dielectric is nitrogen, because nitrogen is conducive to very, very fine bubbling. And the reason Guinness Stout has that extremely creamy head is that it's artificially injected with nitrogen, which likewise produces fine, fine bubbles. So
what's
this is how I made the I don't know the velocity of Guinness. That's interesting.
But this is why, by the way, when you look at a cable like this, you see it's white inside. That tells you that it's been foamed. You don't know how much foam, but obviously the plastic has been mixed with air. That turns it white. And you think about when you take an egg and you know, do that, it turns white. So that's a giveaway that air has been added. Yes?
So I'm sorry, I haven't been to the Blue Jeans cable website or anything. How do you position yourself compared to all these other guys, and what's most of your market?
We market to self-home theater installers, just kind of DIY project people who have said, hey, I want to take the garage and turn it into a home theater. And I have, you know, enough technical sense to know that a lot of what I'm being told about cabling is nonsense, but I want to put stuff in that's good because I'm going to install it and leave it there for a long time, and so I'd rather over-spec than under-spec. And so that's our customer, is that kind of guy. And how we position ourselves, you know, I mean, it sounds a little bit silly, but it's quite literally true that my wife and I, we talked about at one point, we said, you know, there's all this nonsense being used to sell cable. And it's so universal that we wonder whether the reason that nobody actually talks sense about this stuff is that if you do talk sense about it, you can't sell anything. And so the idea was, it's very simple to terminate cables in your living room. You know, we just said, buy some crimp tools and a strip tool and go out and put some cable assemblies on eBay and say, hey, you know what, I got coax that's swept to 3 gigahertz. That'll handle your analog component video just fine. You know, it's got a hell of a lot more bandwidth than you'll ever need, and it's, you know, reasonably affordable and will make it in any length and color you want. And it, you know, most things that you ever think about, like in the way of business ventures, are almost certain not to perform as well as they do on paper. And this thing just vastly exceeded our wildest expectations. We were very warmly received, and we still get a lot of feedback from electrical engineers. We get a lot of feedback from audio engineers. We get a lot of feedback from technical people from all kinds of disciplines. They write us these emails and they say, I can't believe that I've found a place to buy cables where the people aren't completely full of crap.
That's not what I said. I used a different word.
Yes, well, you know, there are a lot of different words used. And we had, you know, we had some fun a couple of years ago when Monster Cable threatened us with litigation, and it brought us several $100,000 in additional sales that year. I brought down the website for a while because everybody wanted to pay us a visit.
Oh, yeah, the pictures that go along with that claim are missing.
Yeah, the link's broken. The exhibits link says that that it cannot repair the PDF.
Oh, all right. Well, I've got the original letter sitting above my desk. I'll scan it again. It was kind of
the
funny.
The letter's okay, but the exhibits are broken.
Drawings are gone.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll fix that. The drawings actually kind of tell the whole story, that anybody with or without a background in intellectual property litigation could probably look at those drawings and figure out that nothing we were selling was infringing any of their intellectual property.
You mean anybody with an intellect?
Yes, anyone with an intellect, and you are required to have one to deal in intellectual property.
Unless you work for the PTO.
It was a strange little adventure. But the thing is, when I was a litigator, which I'm glad not to be, I did a lot of defense work, and I was noted for being particularly aggressive in defense, and so I meant everything I said. They would have had living hell dealing with me. And I remember people afterwards saying, "Oh, I wish they'd sued you because I would have liked to see you give them living hell." And having 2 decades in litigation, I thought I'd rather they didn't sue me. But I would have given them hell, and there would have been some fun along the way because there was no way they were going to beat me.
If they would have sued you, wouldn't it have forced them in a position in court where they would have had to have proven the merits of their claims?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's the whole point.
So based on that alone, you'd know right then and there there's no way they would ever sue you.
Well, you know,
but you can't make them sue you. That's the problem here.
The funny thing is they've fallen into a pattern which unfortunately a lot of people in intellectual property have, which is they've gotten used to the idea that they can bully people who they think are smaller and less capable than they are. And people do. They run from intellectual property litigation in fear. And I can understand why. You know, not long after they did that with us, they actually sued a company. Most astonishing intellectual property lawsuit I think I've ever seen. A woman in Rhode Island loved miniature golf.
Oh, yeah.
She and her husband decided they would design miniature golf courses that had a horror theme. So they had monsters, you know, Frankenstein looming over hole 3 and all that kind of stuff. And they did this all in glow-in-the-dark kind of stuff, and they put it into a warehouse. They franchised this thing out under the name Monster Mini Golf. And Monster Cable actually took them to U.S. District Court over the claim was that Monster Cable did business in the field of entertainment facilities because they had a naming rights arrangement for Candlestick Park. That was the closest they came to being in the trade of running an entertainment facility, which, of course, they didn't run Candlestick Park. They didn't do anything. They advertised by having their name attached to it. And they said that, you know, consumers would be confused and would presumably think they were getting an HDMI cable instead of a round of mini golf. And doggone if they didn't press that thing. And ultimately, the thing that made them give it up was a public relations campaign. But I recall talking to the people who ran the mini golf thing and discovering that they had six figures in legal expenses, despite the fact that basically nothing had happened in the litigation. Now, I came from an insurance defense background, and if we tried to bill a client six figures when nothing had actually happened in the case, we not only would we have lost that case, we would have lost every file that insurance carrier had in our office all on the same day, and it all would have gone somewhere else. But, you know, you can see where somebody in a tender financial position cannot look at the prospect of spending $500,000 in legal fees to defend a budding small business like that. Fortunately, the public relations campaign was so bad, they said morale at Monster headquarters got down to an all-time low. The switchboard was constantly occupied by people calling up to say, I hate you, and then calling up and 5 minutes later to say, I didn't mention that I hate you more than I said. So it went well, and it was what a bully deserved. But the sad thing is people, well, I have good reason to believe that the cable they threatened us over, we actually were buying from the same Chinese supplier that was supplying Monoprice, which is another online cable vendor. And about the day that I got the letter from Monster Cable, all the products on Monoprice's website with that connector disappeared, never to be seen again until new versions of them with a different connector appeared a few months later. And I remember thinking, you know, they clearly got the same letter, but they didn't get the same legal advice. And it just shows you how quickly people back down, how easily people just knuckle under if they think somebody has the wherewithal to take them to court.
Did that occur during the time Monster actually had the name,
the Candlestick Park thing? No.
Or was it even germane?
For the mini golf thing, it was certainly germane, and I think they were in the final months of the Candlestick Park thing.
It's not on there anymore.
Yeah. No. Was it 2004
to 2008?
We were looking at that.
The public in the San Francisco area hated the idea of Candlestick Park being given a new corporate name every couple of years so much that they passed a citizen initiative to prevent the name being licensed out again. And so Monster Cable was the last occupier of that contract.
I seem to remember reading that they actually left the off-ramp sign longer than...
Well, they might have. I remember, I think it was called 3Com Stadium or 3Com Park or something for a while before that.
Yeah.
I understand that the colloquial name for it in the San Francisco Bay Area was Stupid Name Stadium. which
and
tells
you
that
park
you might
too.
Not be getting your money's worth on that naming rights.
SBC, AT&T, we have the other park. Alphabet Park.
Yeah.
I have a question. Do you have any software tools on the Belden website to help you, choose cable for an application, loudspeaker cable?
No, but I'd love to talk to you about what you would like to be able to do on the website, because this is definitely something that we're talking about. We just don't know what people want or where they want to go. And you have to realize also we make 6,000 different products in probably, a half dozen different kinds of markets, of which AV broadcast is really only one market when you look at that. We have industrial, we have broadband cable TV, we have networking, we have home stuff, home choice, and more. And so the question is, would this software work for all of these? That's part of the problem that we are arguing about. So take my business, here's my business card. Take my card, send me an email, and we discuss it. I'd love to.
There is a bunch of audio classes on variety of things, line level, speaker, 70 volt.
Not real. Yeah, my book. Buy my book.
Yeah, I have your book. So
that's the closest we get.
That's the best way. It's just from a software tool speed point of view, sometimes that's a faster way to get more coverage. customers.
I should turn this into an audiobook, you know, or a movie. The movie rights, you know?
Yeah.
I know who should play the Twisted Pair, you know. I bet that there.
They do have a half-decent kind of search function on the website for going machine. Unfortunately, they haven't populated it with a lot of the right keywords and things like that, so it can be hard to do a search based on cable function.
Yeah.
But sometimes that can be useful if you figure out what the right search terms are to get in there.
Maybe a DigiKey kind of reductive search where... Yeah. Put in the features and
the ability to search by
boils it down
by number of conductors, by gauge, by physical features.
It does a lot of that kind of stuff actually.
But
not very well.
It's more by application than it is by physical feature.
Yeah. I'd want both.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm looking by physical features, other times I'm looking by application. Sometimes I'm looking by your trade name. Like I want a Brilliant series cable.
Yeah.
And I just want to see all the Brilliant series cables.
Yeah.
Your website pretty much already does that, though, doesn't it?
Some of those. Not complete enough that I'd say we're there. And I would say if any of you want to develop a software package, we'll buy it, okay? Because that's probably the only way it's really going to get on there. We're not going to hire an army of software people to do this for us, I guarantee you. But if there was something out there that we could fill, you
put it on the AES website, that this is a job that's open for a contract building website developer.
Hey, real quick, just sorry to interrupt, but we're actually closed at 10 o'clock tonight.
Oh, okay.
So I have to lock the doors and set alarms and stuff like that. I realize there's a few questions. But yeah,
we're done.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming.
Watch the website. We'll see you next month.
All right. Good job, guys.
Thank you.
You should have said something earlier.
Yeah. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Pleasure.
Cool. Will you send me info on that 6 and 8 gauge?
Yeah, sure.